This interview is with Dorothy Collins, 1101 South 12th Street, Moorhead, Minnesota. She has been involved in the communications field in Moorhead and Fargo since 1955. This interview is being held at Moorhead State University Recording Studio on April 19, 1985. The interviewer is Janet D. Gallagher, Audubon, Minnesota, representing the Communications Committee of the Oral History Project, sponsored by the Heritage Education Commission. Today, Dorothy, we're going to cover a questionnaire that was prepared by the Communications Committee. And we'll try during this interview to cover these questions and anything else that we would like to add to our interview. Could we start by saying when you were born?
I was born on June 29th, 1916. On a farm near Grandin, North Dakota. I went to school, rural schools in various towns in North Dakota, such as Hillsboro and Kelso, and in various small towns, rural schools and small towns in Minnesota, such as Erskine and Mentor. And then I graduated from high school at Wheaton, Minnesota. We lived on various farms near those towns. And then I received my Bachelor of Arts degree from the University of Washington in Seattle in journalism.
And where did your parents come from?
My mother was from Erskine, Minnesota, and my father from Lena, Wisconsin. They were both first-generation Americans. My mother's parents came from Norway, and my father's parents from Canada. Before that, they came from France. They were French-Canadian. Their parents came from France.
And what was the area of communications you were involved in?
Only in print journalism.
Could you give us the dates, exact times, mm-hmm. whenever possible?
I finished University of Washington in 1954, and I was editor of the University Daily at the time. So I suppose you might say I really was involved from then on. So that would have been 1953 and 54. But actually, I started working professionally in 1955 on the Moorhead Daily News. And then I ended up at the Forum of Fargo Moorhead, and I worked there until retiring in 1981, although I did some part-time work after that.
Maybe you could talk about the working conditions when you started your job.
When I started on the Moorhead Daily News at $35 a week with a Bachelor of Arts degree. And so pay was rather low. The Forum then owned the Moorhead Daily News, and then they closed the office. At that time, the newspaper was operating autonomously, even though they were owned by the Forum. But finally, it became necessary for the Forum to close because of economics. They were forced to close the Moorhead Daily News in July of 57. And then some of us then moved over to the Forum. Pay was always low for women, and when I was hired, they were frank in telling me that the pay was lower for women, and they hoped to change it. That time, there was no law stating that we had to be equal, women and men, in holding the same kinds of jobs. Working conditions were good, and they were always equal to men, really. Although there were certain beats that women did not take. When I started, the only women were working in the women's section. There were no women in news or sports or any of the other departments of the paper.
Were the was the building in very good shape that you worked in those days? Was that?
Yes, really. It was nothing like now, as you know. They remodeled and changed a lot of things, and now Of course, it's very very. It's beautiful. The surroundings are beautiful. It's very quiet, almost like an insurance office or something. And that time, it was not as it's an old building, and it was noisy, and there were clattering typewriters and wire machines, and it's quite different as far as surroundings than it is now.
Were you working on a manual, maybe, at that time?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Probably
an
Old Royal.
And then the composing room was extremely noisy, and if the door was open, then you got those sounds in the newsroom, too.
Those were the days of the good smells of a hot lead, mm-hmm. compared to mm-hmm. now, where it's offset.
Yes, that's right. It's quiet out there, too. Mm-hmm. I think someone who had been out of the business for a long time and wasn't there during the changes and came back, they'd probably be astounded at how different it is. And I think some of the men in the composing room also stop and pinch themselves once in a while to see whether it's really a newspaper composing room.
Do you have to enter your copy into the, would they be
yes.
an IBM computerized system now or whatever it
Well,
would
now, yes, it's a computer, it's a video display terminal, and you write your copy and press some buttons, and it goes into the computer.
And they're expecting it to be in pretty good shape at that time, or do they have spell star so that all that is taken care of? Or is your copy pretty perfect when you?
Yeah, it's
it?
Then the editor will call it up, and of course I still do a column, so I still use mm-hmm. go down there and use the machines. But the editor can call the stories up on the screen and do all the editing.
What happens to proofreaders these days?
There's still some proofreaders, but I think one or two is about all that are on. And I think they must just, I don't believe they proofread news copy. I think maybe they proofread certain ads or something.
They're certainly making more runs now so that
yes,
it's not like having a deadline for a 9 o'clock and 11 o'clock. It's, mm-hmm. it's run out and there's no way to go back and retrieve it. It's ready for printing, I suppose.
Well, yes, although the deadlines would still be the same as they were.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, you're not completely retired, have you?
No, I'm still writing after I retired, I continued to write some Minnesota editorials and a garden column. And then about a year ago, I stopped writing editorials, but I continued with the garden column. The garden column is something that I've been writing since I was on the Moore Daily News. I guess it's around, 29 years then, I guess it is. And no matter what my other main duties were, I always continue to write this weekly garden column. It's a hobby column because I always had this. Lloyd Sveen, used to be the executive editor of the Forum, and he was editor of the Moore Daily News, said was interested in gardening, and he said one day, we ought to have a garden column, and so that's how I started. I said, all right, once I started writing it.
It may be a hobby column, but it's read very seriously by your readers.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever regretted any information you put out or been extremely pleased by it?
Well, no, I haven't, except just recently when I listed a number of mail order nurseries. Well, it turned out that one had one very, very reliable nursery had filed for bankruptcy last fall, and that some people had sent in orders last year and had not received a return on their money or their merchandise. Well, then I learned that a few days after, and I felt sorry about that because I would think that if anybody wrote for the catalog that the firm would have notified them.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, I guess some things people haven't agreed with me on, but I think that's natural because everybody has their own ways of, when they've been doing it a long time, of doing things, and they might not agree some of the advice or some of the statements I made.
Well, I know that in reading that column for years, I haven't noticed you had to retract statements. Mm-hmm. your accuracy must be counting there. The question here is asking us, were there any dramatic changes since you retired? And we talked a lot about the computerized system, and we mentioned the offset. Are there any other dramatic changes or something that would be kind of interesting to...
I think that's the most dramatic change, because that seemed to happen almost overnight, although it really didn't, because first we went into a modified form of offset before we got the computers. And then we learned, you know, we got our electric typewriters and we typed what they called scanner top copy. This was a sort of a, so then this gradually moved into our whole computerized system. So I guess that really, though, is the most dramatic. Probably lesser dramatic, but because it came so gradually, but really important is the difference in the status of women, so to speak, in the newsroom. As I mentioned, when I started, there were no women except in the women's department. And now there are women working in news, not sports right now, but there have been, on Nightside, and women in almost every area, probably fewer on the copy editing desk. For some reason, women don't seem to gravitate toward the copy editing desk, although they're naturally very, I think women are good at it, but for some reason they'd rather be moving around and reporting jobs themselves and such. And this has made quite a difference, and of course, they are to be paid for the same job, the same money, and I assume they are. We are not unionized, so I would not have the forum still does not have a union in the newsroom. There is in the composing room. So I would not have those the exact salaries, but I think it's pretty well comparable as far as I know to men.
They went from a society editor and removed that title, mm-hmm. and went into being editors of lifestyle and different tabloids in or sections, I should call them, in the newspaper. Have you seen management run by women? You've seen the women take on equal roles. Has management, have you seen that?
No, not as much yet. I was the first woman in an editing position when I was Minnesota editor. The Minnesota editor who succeeded me is a man. And there's a graphics editor, and then a lifestyle editor, it's not equal, really, but I think women are slowly making inroads in that too. I think by their very competency they are. I think it took a long time before you even had women in the newsroom, so. Probably it'll probably move along a lot faster now.
Do you think they have to fight for coverage for women as opposed to men? Do you see, I know we do a cover for a magazine, and I say, okay, now you've had a man on that cover for three issues, and it's time we see a woman. Mm-hmm. Did you ever notice that, or do you think they have to watch for that, or doesn't a newspaper see that kind of a problem?
No, I really don't, partly because although the lifestyle department is not supposed to be now geared toward women, it is somewhat, although it covers many of men's activities too. But even in politics, I think that the use of women in interviews and so forth is almost comparable to men. There are more men in most facets of life, so I suppose there would be an overbalance there, but that isn't because of any of the difference in sexes.
You were in, were you the educational or the political writer?
Well, I was both. First, I covered the school board in Moorhead, and also covered the county board, Clay County Board of Commissioners. And then I got sort of known to be in the education writer, even though someone else is writing Fargo School Board. And But I covered, you know, various events at the colleges, and I covered some of the education public school events throughout the area counties. But then mainly then my duties were changed and I became Minnesota editor in 1977, and I covered politics and the legislature that time. So I was, at the time I retired, I was political writer and legislative writer and a Minnesota editor.
Would you like to have had a chance to interview the first woman candidate for president for the United States?
No, not really, because I suppose my interview would have been pretty similar to the reams of copy that were written about her.
Even though she was running with a Minnesotan, mm-hmm. would that have maybe influenced you a little bit? You would.
Well, yes, it might have. I did interview Mrs. Humphrey many years ago, and who was, but it was when she was still the wife of Hubert, who was running then for president, and he was running for vice president then, and that was an interesting experience, but. I guess it's very hard to find any, when somebody has been interviewed and re-interviewed, it's hard to find anything different.
A new slant.
To any different questions to ask.
Did you find that they mostly put you out interviewing with women rather than with men? Did that change over the years?
Yes.
Were you mostly covering women's mm-hmm. groups and activities?
Well, see, when I first went over to the forum, I did cover the county board and the Morehead School Board at that time. But then two women left the women's, then called women's section at once, and I was asked to transfer over to that department, which I did not like, because I don't really care for that kind of writing, or coverage, rather. I guess not really writing. And then, the only people I interviewed then were women, really. And all while I was in that department, but now I guess it's different. And then afterwards, in any of my news beats, it was always equal. I interviewed men probably more than women, depending upon what the occasion was, what they were doing.
Did you start in this field by accident, or was that a plan?
I started because I liked to write. I always had written all my life, liked to do writing. And I thought this was the only area where I could, would be journalism, where I could earn a living writing. And because if you majored in English, and you would write there, but you'd have to be a freelancer, you wouldn't really earn a living writing. And that's really why I started. A lot of people start because they have always been familiar with newspapers, but I never particularly was. I just wanted to do some writing and make a living at it.
And what training did you have for your job when you started?
The journalism, the degree in journalism, we had quite an intensive, it was quite an intensive major at the University of Washington. You spent your junior year working on the daily and taking only classes in journalism, and I felt that it was a very good university, very good grounding, and that was my training. They did not train us for work in the women's section. That was something that they did not do, but I guess that was, except for the fact that news is not, hard news as such is not covered in the women's section. It was pretty much the same, I think.
You never did cover any kind of a hard news?
I don't think they ever do now, very seldom. Sometimes they'll cover a talk, a speech, but very seldom really is it what I call hard news, which is covering a news beat or an actual news event. And that, to me, I like that more than anything. On a newspaper, some people like to write features. Well, you always do write features, but that was not the thing that I really like best about newspaper writing.
Did you like researching and or what you were into?
Yes. Yes, you had to do, you know, we use our library, we have an excellent library at the Forum, and I did use that a lot. And if it's, I think you have to. I think sometimes reporters don't do enough research, and they should. But that's more the kind of research that we use, is we use our own library.
Did you hold any other positions that we haven't talked about besides your column? And
The work in the women's department, and covering these news beats. No, those were the main jobs that I covered. Sometimes you would take over for others for a while, a reporter who was ill or gone on vacation, and maybe you would cover city council or maybe the county or this county board or the city council and city commission in Fargo. But usually I almost always covered events on the Moorhead side. I was much more familiar about the Minnesota and the Moorhead side.
Have we described most of the duties that you held, most of the duties related to your jobs then as that writer?
Yes, I think so. Mm-hmm.
And did those duties change from the beginning of the years to the present? Besides the automated equipment and the salaries, I suppose there was quite a big jump.
Mm-hmm. No, not really. I can't think of any particular changes.
The salaries became more of an equal opportunity,
yes,
at least, as you progressed.
Yes, I think they did. Mm-hmm.
Was there an extremely low point in your career?
I can't think of any particular one, although, as I said, I didn't enjoy working on the women's section, and I was about ready to get out of the newspaper business altogether until there was a vacancy covering the same beat I had been having in the beginning, the county board and the school board. And so I was asked if I wished to transfer, which I did. I'd been, you know, complaining about it for a long time. And so I guess those were the years that I didn't really enjoy it as much as I did since then.
If you started in 1955, were you in on the tornado, which I believe was in 1957?
Yes. No, it happened just before we moved over from the Moore Daily News. The tornado was around June 27th of that year, and we moved over in July. So it was about 3 weeks after the tornado when the office in Moorhead was closed and we all moved over to Fargo.
So you didn't, but you didn't get called in, or did you rush to the
office? No.
To the office? I know they did a recap on the a tornado just the other day in the paper, and it was kind of interesting, and I wasn't sure if your name was in there as being one of the ones that were...
No, it wasn't. And on the Moore Daily News, we really didn't do anything on it either. And I don't really know why, you know, now that I think about it. They didn't call us back.
It was on the other side of the river, but you still...
That's probably partly it, yes.
And the damages stayed over on the other side, didn't they? They didn't.
Yeah, I did. And we did try to just keep to the Moorhead side or the Minnesota side.
Were there any special high points in your... Or have there been any high points? Because you're still in your communications field.
Well, now, you know, as far as memorable events or high points, these are sort of interchangeable. I guess some of the high points were covering the National Republican Convention at Detroit, Michigan, and I used to take along a machine called a Telerom, which is a small portable computer. And sometimes on the plane, something would happen. I used to take it to the legislature all the time. Use it in your hotel room or wherever you can set it up. And something happened to it, and I couldn't use it. Well, I didn't have a typewriter either, so I had to dictate everything the old-fashioned way. You called, you wrote, and you had to write it longhand and call all the stories in. And this is memorable because it was... not good, but the rest of it was kind of fun. I enjoyed covering it. I enjoyed when Carter was president. He was trying to get this treaty through to turn the Panama Canal Zone over to the government there. So he would call in editors or various news personnel from around the nation. So I was one that was asked if I wanted to come down and be briefed. And at that time, that was the first time Perpich was governor of Minnesota, and he would send in a list of names, and mine was one. So we traveled to Washington, and we're briefed on the Panama Canal Zone, all the Secretary of State and a lot of VIPs, and that was interesting.
Certainly a big change must have been the fact that they sent you anywhere out of the territory and covered your expenses, because certainly years ago, I don't care how progressive a newspaper was, they probably didn't do those things. So
that's true. Yes, that's true. That is a milestone. Being that I was asked or was recommended probably by the governor of the state had some bearing. But it's true. You know, ordinarily they would have said, no, we're not going to do this. But
do you think maybe as women writers, the women didn't ask to go? They assumed they couldn't go and didn't push themselves enough?
Absolutely. Women are kind of shy about, they don't push themselves forward much, and now they're getting so they do more.
And did we cover the most memorable event that you...
A couple of things. As you know, the first years after the state allowed teachers to negotiate. Well, first there was a meet and confer law, and then it went further into negotiations between the teachers' organizations and the school boards on salaries and other working conditions, and those were really turbulent years in the 70s. Everybody was trying to feel their way. They didn't know exactly what to do. Well, we have Minnesota has a law that all meetings must be open, except meetings where they are conferring, or a school board, for example, is talking about something to do with the courts, forming a position for themselves on litigation. But otherwise, most meetings are to be open. Well, the teachers' organizations are private organizations, and they are not required to have open meetings. But at one time, we were asked to cover a meeting in Detroit Lakes. It was a regional teachers' meeting. But when I got there, it turned out that they didn't want any news media after all, so I was asked to leave. Well, that was a story in itself, and so that kind of probably made a better story than if I had been allowed to stay. Another time, this was not negotiations, but it was, we had, this is when I was into writing political writing. I was no longer covering the school board, but the reporter covering the school board had left for another job, and they were in the interim, they had no one to cover it, and so I was asked to cover it for a month or so. Well, it turned out they had an organization comprised of people from the community, teachers and administrators, trying to decide on various measures to take to resolve a deficit that the school district was running, and it involved probably letting teachers go or closing schools. And they had decided that this was a private meeting. Well, when I found out it was, I thought it was not a private meeting. So it was quite interesting to both one of the television stations and the forum did go to court to get a temporary injunction to open the meeting, which they did, because by law this wasn't to be a closed meeting, but it had been held that way. These are things that kind of are memorable because they epitomize what the newspaper, what the news business is all about. That it's a newspaper person's job to inform the readers what is happening, and when you and inform the taxpayers where their tax money is going, and when you are and of course this, there's a sort of an adversary relationship in a way between some public bodies, because they would rather do their business without a newspaper person or a television person looking on, and so you have to constantly be vigilant that you are not being that you are being allowed to go to the meetings that are legally to be open to you. And Minnesota has a wonderful open meeting law, and North Dakota's is good too. We're lucky; some states don't have those kind of laws. So it makes it tough for newspaper people.
Have you been watching with interest what's happening with the University of Minnesota then with the
president?
Yes, we have
been. Mm-hmm. We definitely have been. And that the trouble with closing meetings like that to public and press is that it makes more out of what's happening than really is there. Now, and it's a matter of trusting the media too. For example, when local bodies are going to hire somebody important, and you allow the media in, and they're not going to print all of this, what goes on, but you are allowed to be there to see that it's, I mean, to not to see that it is, but to observe that there is no coercion or influence. That is undesirable, and so nothing is said. I mean, you have a meeting, and you the body has a meeting and discusses the applicants, and nothing happens, and it just goes along smoothly. Finally, somebody is selected, and that's announced. And yet, at the university, you know, you have some made so much of because they were so secretive. And also because they didn't go through proper channels or proper procedures to select the new president, which is the object of some litigation now.
Is there a change going on maybe with what is for public consumption? I've noticed a trend in the obituary section where they always reported when it was a suicide. And I wondered if you've noticed that or if they've changed their feeling. Is it no longer a public record?
It's public record, but they've changed the policy on suicides, I know. They felt that it was too hurtful to the survivors, and so they've stopped. It's kind of a conflict. It's hard for. It's up to a newspaper to make their policy on that, but it's kind of hard because. You say, well, people have the right to know. It's a matter of public record. And yet, on the other hand, what benefit is it going to do? And it's going to hurt the survivors. And so that is their policy now.
Would that have had any effect, for instance, that young woman that was found in a river and they reported as a suicide? Now, had that been reported in a different way, would that, because I'm not sure if it's been declared a murder, I'm not sure if this fellow's been convicted.
In that case, the person was found under suspicious circumstances, so it was news, and it had to be printed then. And so what they did was quote the coroner who ruled it as a suicide.
So in that case, it had nothing to do with how it was handled, really, in the local paper?
No, it would be a matter of what the person responsible for making the decision, how he or she saw it, or how he or she ruled.
Over these years of working in this print media, have any of these events influenced your life?
I was trying to think, but I can't think of any one event that has. a lot of night meetings may have influenced my life, but I can't think of any particular loan event. And although you get complaints about how something came out in the paper, they are sometimes valid, and then we run corrections. They are sometimes a matter of opinion. A lot of people say things that they can't believe they said them, you know, and that's why some of the reporters carry tape recorders, not to use in writing their story, but to back themselves up if they've had certain problems in covering certain bodies where the people will say, "Oh, I didn't say that; it was misquoted." And well, just like this, any time you are talking off the cuff, just like this interview, you'll be surprised at some of the things that come out. You don't think that you really said that. Mm-hmm. And that's where the problem comes in. And some people always use tape recorders because of that.
Now, did you come from the age where they didn't use the tape recorders and you found it difficult, or did you go into that eventually?
No, I never did. I know a lot of people started in right away as soon as tape recorders became common. I didn't. I found that covering a public body, yes, they get used to tape recorders, but if you're interviewing someone person to person, one to one, then some people feel very constrained with the tape recorder, and some won't even be interviewed with the tape recorder in the room. And so I just never used one. I think that it's very difficult to write a story by listening. You listen to a half an hour of tape or more, an hour or two if you're covering a public body, and just sorting it all out takes you two or three times as long to write the story.
And you maybe think, well, I've got it on tape, I don't have to remember this.
Yes.
Or otherwise you probably would.
That's absolutely right.
How did a newsprint shortage ever affect your job?
Well, on the farm, when we had there was a shortage of newsprint, we were all told to write shorter, and so we boiled our stories down considerably. We left out a lot of details, and sometimes I think maybe that's good. The readers sometimes like the details. Some just want the bare bones. But this we did because we had to put out smaller papers, and then we also had a television program on Prairie Public TV in which we enlarged upon some of the news events or some of the public meetings. And then we all took turns being on the show. Cal Olson, who was managing editor then, was the moderator. And that was kind of a new experience for a newspaper to use electronic media for this. So this didn't go on too long, and it didn't really affect my job or any of our jobs. It was kind of interesting. We found out what people were reading. We would drop certain features and hear not a thing, and then we would drop the bridge column or the horoscope, and we would get all sorts of complaints.
Did a lack of equipment ever affect your job?
No, not really. I guess that's probably it would have maybe in the electronic media, but not ours.
How did the definition of news change over the years?
I think news is still news, as it always was. But the emphasis on newspapers has changed. Now we have to run a lot of entertainment as well as news, and of course I'm sure that's to meet the challenge of television. But we run things that we never would have run some years ago. We have a travel department, and we didn't have that before. And we've always had some food, but we still don't probably emphasize food as some other papers do. We have, the bridge columns, the horoscope, economics. We have a whole section on money or economics. And many other things that were never in the newspaper. So I guess that's the main emphasis: is news is still news as it always was, but we've added a lot of features.
That was quite a facelifting they did to the forum. Mm-hmm. Was that?
Yes.
Were you happy with that change?
Well, when I go down to the Fargo, see, I worked on my column, I worked both in the Fargo and the Moorhead offices. And when I go down to the Fargo office, it's hard to believe I'm really in a newspaper office, because it's really, the surroundings are so quiet. At first we had music piped in, but they got rid of that over there. Some of them couldn't work with it. And it's entirely different. It's not that clattering, noisy place and kind of messy that it used to be. And I don't, you know, for an old-timer, I guess I don't like it as well in a way, and yet you do get more work done when it's quiet.
But one thing they did was restore all the old furniture, didn't they, especially in one office?
Yes.
Whose office is it on the
Yes, I think that's... That might downstairs, perhaps the publisher's office or the...
It seemed like there was one upstairs.
Or the editor, maybe.
Perhaps the editor's
office.
That
office is very roomy. Yes, they did. That was Joe Dill's office.
You've mentioned a few people during our interview. Are there any memories you cherish from those who taught you?
I thought about that, and I thought in college... There was one man who was very influential, a man by the name of Benson, and he was very down-to-earth. He taught law as well as journalism. He was an attorney also. And he used to have a favorite saying, and it was repeated so much it got to be kind of a slogan, and that was, just tell the folks what happened. And even when he resigned, we had a dinner, and everybody got a little place card, just tell the folks what happened. And doesn't sound like much now, but what it was at the time, unless you knew, a lot of undergraduate students get very carried away, and they get very flowery in their language, and they get very, very verbose and use a lot of language just to... especially for leads and stories. And Benson would say, you don't have to do this, you know. People won't read it. Just tell the folks what happened. And but he stressed simple language, clarity, and that's the way I think that all newspaper stories should be. And I think many of us learned a lot from that. And then I guess... in my professional years, Cal Olson, as I mentioned before, who was managing editor and now is editor of the Sioux City Journal, was probably most influential. I considered Cal a real newspaper man, and he was very fair, and he always said, and he was so enthusiastic, and he always said, and that's one of the things I remember, if you lose your enthusiasm, you know, get out of this business. You can be skeptical. That's the job of a newspaper person, to be skeptical. But don't be blasé or cynical or bored. Continue to have enthusiasm. And otherwise, you don't really belong in this business. And I guess that's what I remember so well, because I think that's very true. And I think people tend to do this. I think our people over there, you know, at the forum, I think they tend to keep their enthusiasm. And that's what makes it interesting. You don't go into the news business to make a lot of money, because you won't. Pay is improved, but it's still not very great. You go because you want to. It's exciting to you. And it always will be, because no matter, you can go to a meeting and you think, well, this is the same kind of meeting I've attended a dozen times, and yet there will be something different that will happen. There's the clash of personalities, the meshing of personalities. People that are really earnestly trying to do their best for the taxpayers and for whatever it is they're working it for. And I think we in this community and area are lucky, because I don't think that's the case in all parts of the country.